of Daf Chof Hei Omid Aleph. The Yiddish word that I didn't get to finish on the other side was the Shmoks in the Beda. Well, Shmoks in the Bach. The Bach is the inner part, right. So I guess they gave Shaul, according to the opinion of Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, they gave him not only, you know, this beautiful piece of meat from the leg meat, but also they gave him a good bone that enabled him, you know, to be able to,
you know, they
to enjoy the barrel.
My mother-in-law insisted that was the best time of the year, the strength,
yeah.
The getting the strength of the
muscle.
Right.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. So now, we finally get back again to what the Mishnah was talking about. As I mentioned, the basic problem that they had in the Mishnah is the question of Ichud, right? In other words, being left together with somebody. Okay? In this case, again, being left together with an idolater. Why? Because how did they consider the idolaters, knowing the civilization in which they lived? They were murderers, they were robbers, right? They engaged in all kinds of sexual predatory actions and things like that and so on. So therefore we learned, you know, that even the animals, you had to be careful, you know, not to stable with them because they would use it for immoral purposes. And so getting back to the end of the Mishnah finally, with which the Sotah says, "Lotis yachet isho bohem," that a woman should not be alone with them, with idolaters, okay? So now the question that the Gemara asks is a different question. It says, but my askino, what kind of a situation are we dealing with in this particular case? Ilemo, if we say that we're talking about Bechad, right? If there was just one idolater, in other words, a Jewish woman and an idolater, right? So he says, the Chabotah Gabi Yisrael Mishori. He says, is it permitted even for, you know, a Jewish woman to be alone with a Jewish man? That's also called yichud, okay? Of course, there are different conditions, you have to understand. I mean, if the wife knows the woman, and so on, it's in the city, it's not someplace in the field or something like that, you know, away from civilization, so. But the point is that, you know, the law of yichud applies to a Jewish man and a Jewish woman. So, that being the case, so what are you singling out the idolater if it's prohibited for a Jew, right? But none. After all, didn't we learn that lo yisiyached yishechod b'shtei nashim, that a man should not be alone with two women? Okay. Next slide. So, Elabit Lasa. So, the answer that they give is okay, it means that when there are three present. One or three? Three. Right. What is the difference? So, Rashi says, let's take a look at the Rashi at the top of the page. Okay? Says the Hoki Nokat Lasa. Why did he choose the number three? So he says the Israel with Lasa Shoro. If there were three Jews with a woman, right, it would be permitted. Okay?
What?
It would be permitted if there were three Jews present. Bain Ba'ir, Bain Ba'derach. Whether they are in the city or on a road, you know, away from the city. Abol trei ba'ir in b'derech lo. But if there are two, meaning two Jews, there with a woman in the city, where obviously people know who they are and so on and so forth, then, you know, they'll be free from temptation, they wouldn't consider, you know, doing an immoral act. But by derech, if they're away someplace, you know, on a trip somewhere, so no. And not only that, why two, no, on the road, and three, yes. So this goes back to something that we learned in the Gemara in Kiddushin, but also we had a hint of it in Sota as well. We had. Why? Because they said, Shemi Sarech Echad Mehen Linikomov. Okay? So, if there are only two, and let's say someone has a bowel movement, has to go to the bathroom, okay? Only there weren't any bathrooms, that's the way that they go if they're on the road. The nearest bush, okay, or something like that. Nearest tree, wherever they went, okay? Right? So, who would be left? There would be only one man left with the woman, right? Right, and he would be there, you know, with this woman. So he gives the source in the Gemara Yusin, the last chapter over there, Asura Yusin. Okay. So, all right. So he says, look, three Jews present, right? That's okay. Yeah. Three idolaters. No good, naturally. What are we afraid of? Three idolaters, or even two idolaters, or one idolater, that they will practice the moral action, you know, with the Jewish woman. So now he says, Chavosa Gabi Yisrael befrutz and Mishorin, says, hold it. He says, you're talking about three, but what if we know that Jews have an immoral character? When you know that the Jews also, you know, that in that particular case, are you going to permit if there were three Jews of immoral character? The hot none. Didn't we learn what? Avol isha achas misyaches u'shtei adoshim. First of all, that a woman can be alone with two men. But the Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, but Rav Yehuda said, Lemi Shmuel, Le Shanu, where did they teach this? It's Elo B'Kasherim, where we know that these are men of, you know, moral character, okay? Avo B'Prutzim, but if Jews have the reputation of being promiscuous, then I feel the Asura Lamilo. And in that case, even there were 10 men, what difference does it make? And Masa Hoyo. And they say, at Pakas, such an event happened. What? The Hotzi Yuha Asura Bemito. That 10 men took a woman out of the town in a Mito over here, I mean, we normally think of Mito as being a bed, but Mito also, in the language of the Gemara, sometimes means they carried the dead. Okay, I mean, they didn't have coffins in those days particularly, I mean, but what did they? They put them on, bier, okay, if you want to call it that. So they took her out to the field and, you know, they had fun with her over there. So obviously, if they're prutzim, then it's no good. So he says, Lord Sricho, he says, well, we need it in the case of the Ishto Imo, he says, when the Jew's wife is present with him, then in that case, he's not going to do something with the other woman. Remember, we started by saying about not even one man with two women, right? So, because if his wife is there, then he's not going to, you know, do monkey business, okay? But Oved Kechovim, however, in the case of the idolater, Ein Ishta Mishamarto, his wife doesn't even object. She doesn't literally watch him, you know. She doesn't object to his having relations with the Jewish woman. of all Yisrael, Yishta Mishamata. But in the case of the Jew, his wife watches him. Okay. I mean, you have to realize, we're dealing over here with a civilization where, you know, anything went, you know. And this was true. They didn't have any great moral character. To a certain extent, it's true today also, I hate to say it. A lot of people don't have any moral character either. Otherwise, why would they have X-rated pictures and so on, right? Specific way in the Shem Shvichas Tarnim. So now they raise a different question. He says, maybe you shouldn't have Yichud because of the possibility of murder. Because again, what did we find out? We found out that they didn't hesitate to kill Jews if they felt they could get away with it. So if a woman is alone with an idolater, what's to prevent him from killing her? Understand? Or as far as that's concerned, we'll see. You know, even a single Jew with an idolater has to be careful, as we'll see in a few moments. Okay. So,
Female idolater.
No, we're talking about the possibility of murder now.
No.
Now we're talking about murder. Okay. All right. So, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyahu. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu said, "Well, the Yisha Chashuva Askinan." We are talking now about a woman who is a very important woman. In other words, she's well known in the community for, and as a result, the Mirta say Minor, so that the idolater would be afraid to do her any harm, because he knows, you know, that everybody knows her and that they'll come to defend her or avenge her or whatever it may be. Okay. Ravini Omar, and this is an interesting statement, he says, Isha Klei Zeno Olek. Ravini says, a woman naturally has her own weapons. Now we have to understand what it means. What it means is that a man is liable to be killed. A woman, the chances are she's not going to be killed because she's going to be raped, but after the rape, he's not going to kill her.
Not going to.
So that, therefore, we say that she has her own natural weapons for staying alive by yielding, you know, to the rapist. So in that particular case, you know, this is how she'll save her life. Well, that's probably his opinion. I don't have to tell you. No. Well, but he feels that her life would be saved by yielding to her. This is what he said.
Rashi is the
small lines on the way down. Right. So my benayhu, what is the difference of opinion between them? It says, Ika benayhu, isha chashuva ben anoshin, right? The case of a woman who is important, who is there among men, v'sheino chashuva ben anoshin. And let's put it this way, a woman who is considered important by men. I should really say that. In other words, they're not going to harm her because they know that she's a very important woman, okay? And, you know, that they will be punished as a result of harming her. But she'ena chashuva bein hanoshim, a woman, this woman is not considered important enough by other women.
Is that connected? These two thoughts connected, or what? A woman that's considered
okay. So let's take a look.
Men, but not by women.
Yeah. Let's take a look at Rashi. Okay. Rashi is approximately opposite where this line is. All right. It says Misha Chashuva. You see it over there? Right. It says Misha Chashuva Bein Hanoshim or Bein Hanoshim. All right. A woman who is considered important both by men and by women. So who is important by both, you know, held in esteem both by men and women? It says, Isha Yofo, a woman who is beautiful, or Krova the Malchus, and who also has good she has good connections to the, literally, the kingdom, but it means, you know, to the government.
Good politician.
Yeah, has good connections to the government. The Mistafei, yeah, the Mistafei Minoda, then they'll be afraid of her, the Lord Kapanor, and they will not kill her. Abol Bishum are royos, but when it comes to immoral behavior, Ika, the Yofahi, right, there is a case, you know, where she is a pretty woman. It's Sarklash Me'in and Devotee Sached. This is the reason why the Mishnah has to say even she should not have Yichud, right? Because Chayashino, they're afraid, Shematis Paten. They're afraid that she might be seduced.
What's Yichud?
Yichud means to be alone.
With, no.
Right, yeah, that's what Yichud means. Okay.
Is that like connected with Yachat, together with...
Yeah, of course. The root is all the same. Right. Avol, Isha She'ina Chashuva Beina Anoshim. However, in the case of a woman who is not considered important by men, but Chashuva Beina Anoshim, but is considered important by women, Mishum Ritzicha Name. Ika Deboa Leho V'yachat Kachoga. Says it is possible that she may be first, raped by the man, and then he'll kill her. Because this scholar is the opinion that a woman does not have this natural protection that we spoke about before. But v'chashuvo bein hanoshim, v'lo bein hanoshim. But a woman who is considered important by men, even if she's not considered important by women, that she may, be there together with the man because they'll be afraid, right? And when it came, that's a question of, having immorality, it won't happen because she's not a pretty woman. No. It's not very easy to follow.
Jewish men and Jewish
not
women?
Not very easy to follow.
Is this Jewish men and Jewish women, or are you talking about...
No, primarily we're talking about a Jewish woman among idolaters.
The prominent woman is held in esteem by the goy,
by the goy too, because he knows that she has connections to the government.
Right.
Okay.
If she's prominent about, if she's well thought out about too by the women, which women? Jewish women
Jewish women doesn't really specify which kind of women, but the point is
you're
that
talking about goyish women.
Yeah, but the men would not have any. That's what he said.
I don't even understand this whole discussion here, because it seems to me that if a woman is well connected, let's say, so she can go out in the city or on the road with anybody that she wants, but if she's not well connected, she shouldn't dare to do it.
In your interpretation, this means that a woman who is well connected has the permission to go out and sojourn everywhere.
She doesn't have to be concerned that anything is going to happen to her, people will think ill of her.
No, I think that they're afraid to assault her because they know they'll be punished.
So she feels safe.
She feels safe because
she has protection.
Is this intended that as a caution for the general?
It doesn't mean that she should run around as a result of it.
Well, that's
simply
I'm just wondering if it isn't license.
Doesn't mean that she should run around.
For example,
but
it means that there would not be
a violation of the law of Yichud simply because she's important enough that you know, they know that she's not going to be attacked.
So if accidentally
right.
she happened to be caught under those circumstances,
right.
they shouldn't worry too much
right.
that she's going to be okay.
Exactly.
From that point of view, I can accept
right.
it. Do you
right.
know the difference
right.
here?
Well,
not
I'm
that it gives
a thinking.
License to do it, but that they wouldn't worry in case
right.
you were caught that
I,
way.
I was
yeah.
just thinking, when our daughter was at Yale recently, she was in a class with Martin Indyk, who was the ambassador to Israel's
yeah.
daughter. His name was also Sarah Indyk.
Uh-huh.
She also was one class ahead of George Bush's daughter.
Well,
now,
yeah.
I'm just assuming that I can say this about my daughter. All three of these girls are reasonably attractive, all right?
Yeah.
Who in their right mind is going to, as they say, quote, try anything with George Bush's daughter? I mean,
right.
they have
yeah.
be in, you know, in a room with Secret Service men,
of course.
With many things happening to them. The same thing I'm thinking with this ambassador's daughter, who, you know, is also a powerful woman.
Yeah.
No.
Well, my daughter, she just has to keep her wits about her, you know, and not get into any
yeah.
Difficult situations, which I guess she did. But,
but
no one was going to protect her.
Yeah,
no.
Right.
No.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, yeah, also. But I don't know what age they're speaking of in relation to this. I mean, you get the impression these are married women that are going about. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe women that are business women or whatever. I don't know.
What it may be, right. But, you know, people travel also. I mean, remember, they're talking about the difference between Baderach and Bo'ir, you know.
Would women be inclined to be traveling alone in those days?
As a general rule, I would say no.
Does that, right off the bat,
right.
it almost,
yeah.
almost not even a discussion when you
right.
think about it.
Yeah.
Right, is that so?
Moot point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
30, 40 years ago,
what? No, that's Yichus. Different word altogether. Yichus.
You
food
with a dollar.
No. This is with
this
a dollar at
the
end.
The other
right.
Is
the other one's with the sabach at the end.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So anyway, let's finish this discussion. I think we'll call it a night at this point, since it's already 10 to 9. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Tanya Kavosi do Avidi Barobin. And we learned a teaching which is in agreement with Idi Barovin. He was the one, you know, who said that Isha Kleseno Aleho. Namely, what would be in line with his teaching? It would be that Isha, a woman, Afal Pisha Shalom Imor, right? Even though things are okay with her, or even so, let's say that there's peace among the Jews and the Goyim, but nevertheless, Lotis Yachid in my head. She should not be alone with idolaters. Mipnesha Chashud and Ahariyos. In other words, we shouldn't be. The question, if there's peace among them, then in that case, we're not worried that she's going to be murdered by them. But nevertheless, she should not be with them because the idolaters still have a reputation for licentiousness. I mean, it's what it boils down to. Right.
In other words,
it's
general rule.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
okay.
The ruling prohibits the seclusion of an adulterer is necessary only when you've got the case where the violator's wife is with him. I don't understand that. How can the husband is with him? With her?
We said before that in the case of an idolater, his wife is not going to object to the fact that he has relations with this woman, this Jewish woman.
you know,
this is
the thing.
This is what they said, okay?
The,
Whereas, if he's married to a Jewish woman, the Jewish woman is with him, She, you'll see to it already that he doesn't.
Right. That the what? That the Jewish man shouldn't have relations with
anybody, anyone.
Okay.
Right. Talk about stereotypes, you know. Say,
yes. Tonight is the 15th of I guess it's the month of December. In the year 2004, and we are now continuing Gemara Benazora. Daf Chof Hei, Amud Beis, in other words, 25B, in the middle of the page from where we left off last week. Okay. All right. So we start from where it says, Lo Yisiyachei, just above the middle over there. Just above the middle.
What does it say?
Lo Yisiyachei, Adam Imahem. This is the text of the Mishnah that we start with. Okay. Which means, okay, that a Jew should not be alone with Goyim. Now, of course, again, when I say Goyim, I mean with idolaters. Why? Because, as we'll see, not only do they have a terrible reputation as far as their immorality is concerned, but also they had the reputation of hating the Jews to the extent that they would kill them.
But they would also like Jewish women, I suppose.
No. All right, so.
Is this specific to women, or...
No, this is a man. Even
man
a man
too.
Is not, because we'll see from the text right now that they're talking about a man. Okay? So that Adam over here means
a man.
Of course, a woman's understood,
on
yes. But certainly even the man. Yeah.
What's the first word on the line that you're looking at?
Okay. The last word, I mean, let's say the first word on the line now is Imohen, right in the middle. Right in the middle.
I got it.
Right. That tough race is Tana Rabbanan. In other words, this is a quotation that they have from someplace else, which was not necessarily officially entered in the Gemara, or it could be in some other section. Okay? It could be Tosefta, it could be Gemara, some other Gemara. But at any rate, it's a quotation that they're citing at this point. And what is the quotation? It says, Yisrael shlizdavin loy evet koychovim baderach. Jew is walking on the way, and all of a sudden, lo and behold, he has an idolater on the road together with him. All right? So, the Gemara that the sighting says, Toflo Yemino, he should put the idolater on his right.
On his right.
On his right. Yemino. In other words, if this is the Jew, we should have the idolater go over here. I would say on this side. Okay? Keep him on his right. We'll come to it.
You know what?
Okay. Yes.
It has to do with the right arm is the one that could defend yourself.
You exactly have hit it on the head. It's exactly what it is. All right.
Wedding customs arranged. That's why the bride was on the right side of the groom, so that he could protect her. Back and
really?
Okay.
Yeah, but isn't it? Wouldn't it also be true for if the idol worshiper was holding a weapon, it would be on the right, and that would be off to the
All
end
right.
of the road.
You're anticipating what the Gemara is going to say. Okay. Tell you, we have some bright people over here that they can anticipate what the Gemara is
saying. Unless it's like a box
That's all right, you're doing fine.
We've been watching too much professional boxing, I don't know.
You know, you just have to hit something that we know something about.
There is a traditional statement that, you know, a person comes up with an idea and then he sees that Rashi has the same idea. So he says, Moshe Kivanti. He doesn't show Rashi. But thank God he says that I was able to grab the meaning which occurred also to Rashi. Okay.
Right.
Not the Rashi. All right. So this is exactly what's happening at this point. Very interesting. Okay. So why on his right? Why to his right? So Rabbi Yishmael, Benoshe, Rabbi Yochanan, Mebroko, Emer. He says the reason is fact, Besayev, if the idolater has a sword, and in that case, Toflav Yaminov, then he makes sure that the goy, the idolater, is on his right, because obviously, as you said, you know, this is where the sword is, so that if he sees he's going for the sword, he can do something about it. It has time, okay? B'makel, but however, let's say that the idolater has a stick, a staff, whatever you want to call it, okay? Then in that case, Tofel is small. Then in that case, he should put the idolater on his left, okay? So far, okay. So for this, we have to take a look at good old Rashi, okay? Good old Rashi. Rashi, you know. Rashi is all the way down at the bottom of the page. Tofla Dimino. Okay. It says... Pardon me?
Which one are we doing, Basayi or
Bamak? Well, first of all, okay, all right. So let's do... All right. First of all, Tofla Dimino. Why... You know, in the case of the stick, or the case of the sword, he should keep on his right, and then we said, with the case of the staff, he should keep him on the left. So he begins, first of all, by saying, Tofla Dimino, why does he want him on the right? He says, Chabu La'Avodah Zarah Yamino Shel Yisrael. He, you know, when the goy joins him, so he should be on the right of Tzavim. Because if the idolater wants to kill him, Yishlach Yisrael Yad Yamino, then the Jew can put out, you know, can stretch out his right hand, the Yochez bow, and he can grab hold of the goy as he's trying to do something. All right. Then it says, then, you know, the distinction between Messiah and Bemakam. Messiah with the sword, right? The Imhoya Arkevet Krikovim Chogu Messiah, you know, if he's a girt with a sword, and totally Yisrael Amina. So the Jew keeps him on his right. Kadesh hey yod smo shall evet kechovim shall sayev chogibor litzad yibino shall Yisrael. The reason being that where does the goy keep his sword? He keeps it on his left side. Okay, keeps it on the left side, and naturally he's going to pull it out with his right. But when the Jew sees that, you know, he wants to pull it out with his right, then in that particular case, you know, that with Sad Yamino, so Shal Yisrael, so Umizumanis the Yomin Yisrael Echozbo. So the Jew's right hand is there ready to grab hold of it.
Grab hold of the sword and
right.
The scabbard.
Right. On the other hand, how about the Bakel with the stick, where we said that just the Punk Fakel, right? He says, "Imbiyad oivet kechovi makel." Right? If he has in his hand a stick, then toifle Yisrael Yimini. Then the smaller, then the Jew puts him out on the left side. Why? Shetahei yad yamin oivet kechovim shehamakel bo smuchel Yisrael. Because where is he holding his staff? He's holding it in his right hand. Okay. So, and that's the case. If the Jew has him on the left, then Shatahei Yad Yamin Hoivet Kechovim Shabakal Bos Muchal Yisrael. Then in that particular case, the right hand of the Goy will be near the Jew, the Yim Yorim Yad Yamino, and if he should raise his right hand, the Ma'achso Smolo Shal Yisrael, then the left hand of the Jew can grab hold of him, Bamakel, right? Bamakel Hasomuch, right? Some of us get hold of his, you know, of the stick with the hand, with his left hand. The Tofloy, the Yamino, because if it were on the other side, I mean, in other words, if the Goy were on the right side, then Yehea Makel Rochaik Meyodosho Yisrael, then in that case, the stick would be too far for the Jew in order to be able to reach.
Yeah, because
okay.
He carries the staff in his right hand.
Correct. Right.
So this basically assumes that the Jew is going to be like exercising some sort of like jujitsu or, you know,
martial
I mean,
arts.
Because
really?
Why, I mean, why doesn't he also have a sword or a staff to defend
well,
himself?
Well, obviously he didn't
they
have, no, I can't say, it's possible that they were prohibited from carrying it, I don't know.
Could be Shabbos.
Well, Shabbos is one possibility, but I'm thinking more in terms of, I mean, because even Shabbos, I mean, Pikuach Nefesh Teicha Shabbos, you know. I think that quite possibly it may be that you know, a Jew is prohibited from carrying arms. That's all. When the Jews were their own bosses, they could be armed.
That's right.
But when they're subservient to somebody else, then they couldn't be armed. I mean, this is true throughout the ages. Right. This is why you know, the Israeli army is. Such an anomaly. We haven't had a Jewish army in a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
Ages and ages, you know. Okay. All right. Now, that's one situation. Now, he continues with another situation where the Jew could be in danger. Okay? Hoyu Olin Bemala. All right? They were going up a hill, okay? An upper grade, the hill in the bottom. They were going up, right? Going up. All Yodim Yerida, all they were going down, okay? So, both of these pose problems, you know, for the Jew who is there together with the idolaters. So it says, Lo Yehei Yisrael Lamato. The Yevet Kachavim Lemala, okay. Ela Yisrael Lemala, the Yevet Kachavim Lemata, okay. So first of all, he says that the Jew should not be walking below the idolater, okay. If there are. Okay, let's go again, right? Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Apparently, if they're either
right.
walking uphill or down.
Right, right. And the guy, right.
Above
right.
The,
right.
Kids,
right.
Should be above.
But rather, the Jew has to be above and the.
Has to be above.
Yeah,
and also going up.
But even going up, as we'll see from Rashi. And Ovid Kechovim, and the idolater should be below the Jew. And not only that, the Al Yashok Lefanov Shem Yeretz is Gugolto. Nor should the Jew, for example, bend down before the idolater, because then the idolater is liable to split his skull,
right, right.
Smash his skull.
Does this say, if I got it right,
yeah.
My understanding is that if the Jew's got to keep the idolater in his eyes, so
right,
behind
of
the
course,
idolater,
of course,
way,
not put himself in danger
himself
of being attacked.
He can't be in front of the idolater; the idolater could attack.
Of
him.
Course,
he's got to have the idolater
right.
in his eyes.
Right. Right.
No, well, going up, he's supposed to be
right.
higher than the idolater, so the idolater would be
he's behind
him.
Him. Going up is going to be higher then.
Yeah. So
is that what
going
it
up, he would be in front
no,
of him.
No.
Okay. No. In other words. As we'll see, Lo Yehei Yisrael Lamata Elo Lamala. All right, this is the point. The point is that the Jew should not be lower than the idolater, but rather should be above it.
It has nothing to do with a hill. I don't think it has anything to do with a hill.
Yeah, you're going up a hill, going down, of course. That's what Mala and Mata mean, of course. Okay.
So,
but yeah, but Rashi, all right, just be patient and we'll take a look at Rashi and then hopefully
my
okay.
interpretation
okay.
is that he's got to keep him in his eyes.
Yeah, well, this
so
we understand, of course.
We'll see. That, I mean, that's
yeah.
a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll see.
All right, let's take a look at Rashi. Let Rashi strategy. Speak to us.
Okay, Rashi.
He's in the room. Speak to me.
Baalia. If they're going up, right? But he says, Yeleich Yisrael if they have it kachavim. He says that the Jew should go before the goy. I don't see that.
I'll be honest.
Yeah. Right.
But he says
the Haidu Labala, because this means that he's above.
The Israelite should go first.
He should go first because he's above.
But don't walk directly in front of them.
Right. Elo Shetoflo Limino. In other words, going up, okay, the Jew goes first, but he should make sure that the goy is on his right hand, as we said before, right? All right. Because it doesn't mean, you know, that the goy should be really behind him. In other words, we're talking only if they're going sort of pretty close to each other, like almost abreast of each other. So in that particular case, one is maybe a little bit ahead of the other, but nevertheless, he's always on guard to make sure that he's not going to be attacked. Right.
So he says they're going up a hill, the Jew is a step ahead of the goy, and the goy is on the right of the Jew.
In that case, we should make sure that the idolater goes in front of him.
I just don't understand why it's reverse going up.
That's why Rashi says, well, that, really, they're going up practically simultaneously.
Well, he's walking at an angle.
I don't know, it seems to me if you were going to lunge at somebody, you want to lunge down toward your attackers rather than...
Yeah, that's true. But the question is, where is the road? Is it going up or is it going down? In either case, there could be situations of danger. That's the point.
If you're sort of lunging uphill, it would be more difficult. So the going up, if he's ahead, he's got an advantage.
Right.
I suppose the theory is he could turn around and strike somebody, the advantage of being in an upper position. But I agree with you. Even saying that, it seems to me that you're always better off having your opponent, you know,
in your sight rather than where you can. That's what's important.
Yeah, because to me too, I mean, if I would take the shot, and obviously it would seem to me that in reality, the reading, not as Rashi interpreted, because Rashi is puzzled by the text itself, you have to understand that. Rashi is puzzled by the text, because to the average person, which would make more sense? Not talking about going down, because that we can see logically, but going up. It would make more sense to have the goy go first,
the Jew afterwards.
I have a little modern agada I'd like to share, which is really picking up on what Sylvie said. A few years ago, I was watching. It wasn't the movie Shoah, which is like 7 hours, but it was something like that. And one man that was a Jew that was in the partisans, and this was in Belarus, he told about his experiences, and he said, "No, the partisans are also anti-Semites."
And among them, right? So he was there, and they would go out on a maneuver, so to speak, or marching along through the woods, whatever.
And there's one fellow always goaded this Jewish man, and his name was like Abramovitz or Abramovitz, some kind of derogatory things. You know, I'm going to get you one of these days, and so forth and so on. He said, you know, I was always careful to have him. Of course, they were all carrying guns.
Yeah.
So I was always careful to have him in front of me. Always, when they were walking through the woods, always have him in front of me. So he wouldn't shoot me from behind. I mean, that was the implication. So there's something to this. This is like, what, 2,000 years later, 1,500 years later?
Yeah, but you know.
How many officers were killed by their men?
Well, this is, you know, in Vietnam, you know, the officer.
They were fragged.
So they wouldn't get fragged.
Yeah.
I mean, because this was a common thing, and, you know, popular sergeants or popular officers, if they happen to get in front of, you know, in front of their men, somebody would shoot them because they, you know, they always took the attitude if they didn't get rid of them, they would end up getting killed because of their ineptitude.
Bad leadership.
You know, times, I mean, the Gemara spells out, for example, right after the war of the Jews against the Romans, when they finally were defeated, you know, that the Romans passed laws saying that if you met a Jew, you had to kill him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, really?
After,
This was after Bar Kokhba, or?
This even is after the foot of the Bias of Shea.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Before, for the first temple.
The second temple. We're talking about the Romans. Right. Yeah.
Subsequently,
in the Shea'is, they said that if you killed a Jew, then you had to pay a monetary fine.
That was a punishment.
It wasn't only until many years. But until many years afterwards, you know, that finally a Jew could sue for any attempt made against his life or anything like that, or property or whatever it may be. Right. So it shows you, I mean, the Jews were fair game. And look, I mean, the Nazis weren't the Jews fair game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Jew had no defense. I mean, he had no... they weren't allowed to bear any arms or anything like that, obviously.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so now we continue. All right. Yeah. And somewhat along the same lines.
All
right.
Right.
Yeah. The Gemara says, She'alo le'echad ho'lech, what if the goy asked the Jew, how far are you going?
Where are you going?
Where are you going? So, so he should say that he's going a distance much further than what he really has in mind to go. Just as we find that Yaakov did exactly the same thing with Esav, you know, Esav HaRasha, with the wicked Esav. Dichsiv, the pasuk says in the Torah, if you remember, after they finally got together, right?
Yeah.
And then Esav is very generous. He says to Yaakov, he says, come with me. You know, I have plenty of room in my land over there in Seir. So why don't you come to me? We'll go together. He says, Nisa v'deila. All right, let's go. Let's travel together, right? Yaakov was not very happy with the invitation because he suspected, you know, what were the real intentions of Esav, right? So what did he say to Esav? He says, okay, we'll go together, but I have to go slowly. You can go fast because you don't have any cattle or anything like that, but I have cattle, the animals are nursing, they can't go that fast, and so on and so forth. So he says, Arasher Ovel Donisir. Yeah, the time will come, I'll get to you, you know, to my Lord in Seir. Okay? Uksiv, and then we find afterwards that the Pasuk says, for Yaakov's Nosa Sukosa, right? That Yaakov traveled to Sukkos. Now, obviously, Sukkos is in Eretz Israel and not in Seir, right?
Yeah.
And so why did he tell him that? Obviously, in order to protect his own life and so on, because he suspected. So that's an example. And now they give another example, or actually they'll give two examples now.
Before you go on, I'm sorry to interrupt you. In this case, he's not lengthening the distance that he has to travel because Edom or Seir would be farther away.
Right,
than
that's
the
case.
Okay.
Right, and all this.
But
he's
also
really
keeping him
right.
In front of him.
Right.
He isn't going with him.
Actually, he never went there.
He sent him ahead.
Right.
The whole
right.
Point.
Right.
So
of course.
The whole point is that
right.
he's ahead of him.
Right. I used to tell
and
stories.
Spy on his armies and
right.
his men and all the rest of it, you know. If you
I used to tell stories in Yiddish also about this one. He says, going to Minsk, no, it's going to Pinsk or something or other. Minsk, Pinsk, whichever was in Europe or further and so on. Okay. Anyway, that's an alter Meiser, apparently. And they say, yeah, look, I'll give you a Meiser. Ma'aseh b'talmidei Rabbi Akiva, all right? I'll tell you a story. Among the disciples of Rabbi Akiva, Shahuyah Hokim the Ksiv. They were going to Ksiv, okay? Ksiv, that's a place in the Galilee, okay? All right. So, Pogba had listened, so highway robbers came across them. Literally met them, but that's not met by invitation. This is being such a case, right? So Omer Lehen, and they said to the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they said, "Anatem Hochim, we're going to." So Omer Lehen, so they said, "La Akko, we're going to Akko," which obviously was a further distance than Kaziv. Okay, Kevish Hegir LeKaziv. Once they reached Kaziv, which was on the way to Akko, you understand. So Pershu, they said goodbye to them, and so the highway robbers, they said to them, you know, Abu Lahen, Talmidei Biyatem, whose Talmidim are you? Abu Lahen, so they said to them, Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, we are the disciples, the students of Rabbi Akiva. So Abu Lahen. So, what was the reaction of the listen? They said unto them, Ashrei Rabbi Akiva, fortunate is Rabbi Akiva, the Talmidah, and his students. Shalom pogal behen odem rabbi olam. Because no evil man ever, met them or attacked them at all. Because they had the training that their teacher had given them to know how to avoid getting into trouble. Okay? So that's a story about the students of Rabbi Akiva. Of course, remember, Rabbi Akiva was in Eretz Israel.
This is sort of counterintuitive, though. Maybe it would seem to me that the law, if you would want to say to somebody that you're traveling a nearer distance rather than farther. Why? Because the farther you're traveling, it's the more opportunity for this person to find an opportunity to strike you and rob you.
I won't
have enough time to get this accomplished.
So we have to say punktfakir, just the opposite.
Right.
Okay, how so? Yeah.
Namely, that if they gave a nearer distance, then they would immediately
strike them. Right.
He's got a long distance.
Right.
They don't wait. No, they wait. They have time.
They wait. They wait from other people.
Right. They wait. They wait. And then they lose the opportunity.
That's logical.
Okay.
That's it.
Right.
So now we have another story along the same lines, only this time the action takes place in Babel. Okay?
Where are we now?
The last few words. On the Chav Hei, on the Dalai, on the base, excuse me.
Right.
Okay.
Rav Menashe?
So, yes. This is a story about Rav Menashe. All right. Rav Menashe, Hav Ozal, Udei Torta. All right?
Yeah.
Next page.
Rav
Actually,
maybe I will.
What
type of
impact
do we have? Whatever your heart desires. Whatever your heart desires. They're all sugar free.
This is Superior, but well, Superior. Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
That one is from Israel.
Right. That's what Goldie brought. The other one is what?
Oh, it's very healthy. Very healthy.
Okay. So, Rabbi Nasha Abba Azul of Eitorta. So, Rabbi Nasha was walking to Beit Urta. Beit Urta is some place in Babylonia. Okay? Ogilvy Gadovim. So Gadovim met him, literally. So as we said, you know, it means that they caught up to them, right? Okay. Ogilvy, and they said unto him, he was here, he was going alone.
Yeah, right.
By the way, Rav Nachum was going alone, as you realize, right? Mm-hmm. So they said unto him, Anka Azalt, so tell me, where are you going? So Ogilvy, the Pumpadisa. So he says, yeah, I'm on my way to Pumpadisa. Of course, Pumpadisa was a very famous yeshiva over there. So he said, I'm on my way to the yeshiva of Pumpadisa. Kimoto the Beituta, then when he got as far as Beituta, Porish, he says, goodbye. Amule, so they said to him, Talmido the Yehuda Ramot, you must be a Talmud of Yehuda, that faker, that liar.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And I don't have to tell you that Rabbi Yehuda happened to be a very great rabbi. I mean, he's quoted again, 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 again. And yet, these Gadovim, they refer to him as Rabbi Yehuda the liar,
yeah.
Ramoah, okay? So, Amalahus, he said, Yedisidle, hey, all right, okay, you know him? Yehei Ravor, may it be God's will, to Lehevu Handhu Inche Bishavtek, that these people, meaning you, should be put into Cherub. Also, into Cherub. Shamta is another form of Cherub. Right. Excommunication, okay? So, Ozul, they went. Avdu Genevosa Esrimetat Chonin. For 22 years, they committed robberies. For Lord's sake, but they were not successful.
The robbers?
The robbers, they weren't successful.
They were bad robbers.
We can always make a moving picture of that.
because they were cursed by Rabbi Yehuda.
Of course, right.
So they weren't successful after that.
Right.
They kept trying.
So Kevin the Chazuk, since they saw it, they realized it, that it's this curse that was put upon them, you know, that's why they weren't successful. So also Kuho, the Torisham Taihu. So they all went and they asked, you know, that the Cherem be removed. Right? The Habibahu, and among them there was Chad Girdono, there was a certain weaver, he's also a robber on the side, the also the Shriya, right, who didn't want to come and beg, you know, that the curse be removed. The Shri the Shamte. Right. So you know what happened? Achle Arye. A lion ate him up. So hey Kevin, the Haida the Abra Yinshi. So this is what people say, you know, became a folk proverb that Yudona the Lotaison Shata Matsir Mishode. In other words, that if a weaver who is not humble, he's going to lose his, it's going to lessen the amount of years that he's going to live. Okay. And then the Gemara concludes at this point. It says, Tor Chaze, come and take a look. Ma ben Ganve Bovel, the list in there is as well. Look at the difference between Ganovim in Babylonia as compared to highway robbers in Eretz Israel.
So what's the difference?
They have a higher class.
The highway robbers and Eretz Israel, they will find a light, right? They will find a light. They said, Ashrei Rabbi Akiva of a Talmidov, right? They praised Rabbi Akiva and his disciples because, you know, they knew how to avoid everything else. And by the way, Liston is a more dangerous person than Egonov.
Because they're robbers,
right. Now, are these assumed to be always armed, whereas a gamut may or may not be armed. You understand?
Now, were they the highway robbers? Were they Jewish?
apparently.
Yeah. They were Jews. They're all Jews.
We're not talking about.
They're all
Jews. No, we're not talking about goyim in this case.
Right.
In other words, in other words, if you're going with an idolater, always tell them that you're going further in order to protect your own life and so on. But then they give examples, you know, where following the same tactic, even among Jews, you know, it worked. Okay.
We didn't have prisons. I never heard that the Jews had prisons in those days at all.
Well, as far as prisons are concerned, that's already a different problem. Normally, I mean, according to the law of the Torah, you know, if a person stole something,
you had to pay it back,
and in many cases you had to pay double the amount
And then the cities of refuge for those who committed...
That already was for accidental...
I have another example, if I may. I was reading Mishpatim, and in Rashi, there was... Here's the law, is that if somebody struck another person but didn't kill him, but he was that second person was injured and took to his bed. And then the law goes on and says, well, when that person gets up out of his bed, then there has to be compensation for the first person, second one, for the doctor's care and loss of work. But Rashi says in his commentary, and this is to the point, he said that really what they did was after the first person struck the second one, they didn't know what the result would be, so they would put that first person in prison, in a mishmar, and they would hold them there until they'd see whether the second person died or he recovered. Right. When he recovered, they would release him. So even there in Eretz Israel, they had...
Well, it must have had some way, right?
Safety.
Put him on a house arrest.
They also
had... Could possibly have been a house arrest.
But certain things also they had where they would starve a person to death. I mean, under certain circumstances. They would put him in the term that they use in the Gemara Sanhedrin, and they keep up.
Right.
And they keep up, the dome.
Some of them refused.
And then, you know, they would starve the person.
But that's not according to Torah. Cool. That isn't one of the methods they're supposed to use.
No, but this is a method that was used, you know, where, for example, you know, you couldn't prove murder, although you knew that murder had been committed and so on. You know. Of course, there were no witnesses, whatever. I mean, what are you going to do in certain cases? You know, the person was a danger to society, but because you had not warned him that he was liable to the death penalty, so you can't enforce a death penalty. So they looked for other ways, you know, to see what could be done.
This was under the Sanhedrin?
Yeah.
It's interesting that the rabbis were very practical and that they allowed, I wouldn't say white lies, but for the safety and the life of the Jew, they allowed, right in here in the Talmud, some means of self-protection that didn't involve a certain amount of, I wouldn't say deception, but misleading.
Well, that was all meant for protecting, the whole point was to protect your life.
Right, of course.
It was sort of institutionalized, in the Talmud.
Survival, these were all survival factors.
Practical men.
You know, out of hardship comes wisdom, and they suffered so much in the hands of so many around them that they devised ways of survival. Don't you think?
We would have been better off by teaching the ethics to the Jewish robbers not to rob other Jews.
teaching
the Jews how to defend themselves against the Jews. But they don't have this as saying to the goyim that are robbers.
They don't have them
deceiving them because they know that they're not going to even have a chance to speak. They'll be struck down.
They still deceive them. That's part of it.
I guess so. I guess the original part was that, right? It was for
Idolaters.
It would be for any robber.
Right.
The point was that it was even for Jewish women.
Okay. Wow. I think I'm going to stop at this point because the new Mishnah, you know, I'd like to tie in the Mishnah with the Gemara next week. Because then, what you see, we'll be dealing with the problem of midwifery.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll stop at this point.
Meeting next week?
Yeah, we'll meet next week. Why should we meet next week? Okay, tonight is the 22nd of December, the year 2004. We are continuing now on Daf in the Gemara Avodah Zarah, Daf Chof Vov, Amud Aleph, in other words, 26a, and we start with a new Mishnah tonight. And as an introduction, again, I want to remind you, some of the things that we're going to read may sound scandalous to us.
Scandalous.
Horrible. But what we find, however, is again that we must remember that we're dealing with an age where the goyim very often were very lawless, and they didn't hesitate to kill Jews whenever they had an opportunity to. So it reminds us of the days of the Nazis. And there have been other incidents in Jewish history too, where Jewish life was simply, as we would say, was hefker. In other words, the goyim were willing to kill Jews, whatever it may be. So we see the reaction over here in what the Mishnah has to say at this point. The Mishnah begins by saying, "Bas Yisrael lo tiyaleh desvoy vedes keichovim, mipnei shem yaledes bein na vedes keichovim." All right, the first part of the Mishnah is easy enough to understand. It says that a Jewish woman should not act as a midwife to an idolatrous woman. Idolatrous woman, whatever you want to call her, right? In other words, a woman who is an idolater. Why? Because she is helping to give birth to a son that will be dedicated to Avodah Zarah. All right? To idolatry. Avol Ovedes Kechavim, however, a woman who is an idolatrous woman, Mialedes Bas Yisrael, she can serve as a midwife to a Jewish woman. That's the first part. We'll see that it's not as simple as it sounds. Okay? And then the next part of the Mishnah says, Bas Yisrael lo seinik bido shel avedes kechavim. It says that a Jewish woman shall not nurse. Because don't forget that in those days they didn't have bottles and so on. I mean, they needed people to do nursing. All right?
The wet nurses.
Yeah, wet nursing. So she should not nurse the child of an Ovedes Kechavim, right? Of an Ovedes Kechavim, however, an idolater, a woman who is an idolater, Meiniko Bino Shel Yisrael Bereshusa. She can nurse the child of a Jewish woman in, the question is, what do we mean by Bereshusa? Bereshusa over here means in the presence, in other words, in the home of the Jew. Okay? Because obviously, if it's in the Jewish home, it's understood that what? That there'll be other Jewish women around. And we'll see how this idea is brought out. Okay?
Yes. Have this feeling like the identification of a Jew is through the mother, the lineage of Judaism.
Well, I wouldn't say that here the Mishnah is simply based upon that fact. It's an important fact, there's no question about it. I mean, we know, that whether a person is Jewish or non-Jewish, is, depends upon who the mother is. That we do know. But they're talking in general. I mean, after all, who gives birth?
Yeah,
a woman gives birth.
I understand.
Right.
Question.
Yeah.
because I asked the same question some time back.
Right.
A child born from a Jewish mother is considered Jew, but yet the lineage is it's handed down through the father.
That's correct. In other words, if the father is Jewish as well, that's the point. Mm-hmm. The mother has to be Jewish. So, in that particular case, then the father's status is passed on to the child. In other words, if he is a Kohen or a Levi or Yisrael, okay? That's what it is. Because we find the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar over there, so it says over there, Yisrael plays a verse. So, in other words, that each one is according to his father's house. So, one of the understandings, you know, one of the interpretations of this is that it means, you know, that the status, the yichus, shall we say, the yichus of the father will confer the yichus upon the child. But obviously, the child has to be born to a Jewish mother under this.
Don't forget, before Mount Torah, there was a lot of marriage to non-Jewish people.
Before Mount Torah, it's a different situation. We're talking about from Matan Torah on, I mean, when the time that the Torah was given, and we are bound by certain rules and regulations.
So, what is the child if the child has a Jewish mother and a non-Jewish father? What is it, an Israelite, or is it according to?
Yeah, an Israelite.
Oh, it's an Israelite.
Well, of course.
A mother could be. Oh.
Even if the mother is the daughter of the Kohen, it doesn't make the child a daughter, you know.
But even if the mother is the daughter of a Kohen, she's married to an Israelite, to a Yisrael. The child is still a Yisrael.
Absolutely.
So it still takes.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. The Yichus itself is passed down through the father. But the fact of being Jewish, this is primarily the status of the mother. Right. All right. But, you know, what I said a few moments ago, I mean, the Mishnah is dealing with the fact, I mean, that women are the ones who give birth, and in those days they didn't go to men doctors, obstetricians, in order to give birth, and said, how do they give birth? They had midwives, right? Women who helped them. So this is what they're reflecting over here.
Actually, I was thinking, this was before the Torah. Didn't the Jewish women act as midwives for the Egyptians, or not?
They may have, but they acted as midwives for the Jewish women. Right, Shifra and Pua, that's what we'll be reading about another week.
Yeah.
Right. They disregarded the edict of Pharaoh, and they saved the Jewish children.
The Jewish boys.
Yeah.
The Jewish girls were always
good. Yeah, we understand. I mean, okay. I'm not being too technical. Okay.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Sorry.
All right. So now the Gemara discusses this Mishnah. And the first part sounds, you know, like a repetition of what the Mishnah is. But in reality, you know, they're bringing in other elements as well. Chodorabonim. So our sages taught us, Bas Yisrael lo tiyaledes ha'avides kechavim, b'bnei shem yaledes bein le'avides kechavim. Well, this is what the Mishnah said, that a Jewish woman should not act as a midwife to a woman who is an idolater, because she is helping to give birth to a child who will be dedicated to Avodah Zarah. Right. The Avodah Kohanim, and by the same token, as the Mishnah said, the woman who is an idolater, Lo Tiyaledes Bas Yisrael, should not help a Jewish woman give birth. Now, what is added over here is the next three words. B'pnei Shechashudim, or the next few words. Because they are suspected of committing murder. In other words, of murdering a Jewish child. Right. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir.
So that's like in contradiction of what we just heard.
Yeah. But the Mishnah itself simply said that she can, as long as it's in the home of a Jewish woman. Right.
No.
Take a look again. The Mishnah said, "Okay, Avodah Zarah may nick." Excuse me. Yeah, yeah, that's Mosfeld, right.
Is it Kohanim Ibn Ishmael?
Yeah. That's all. The Mishnah simply said, Yeldon is Mosfeld, that's where it stopped, right?
Right. Okay.
Rabbi Meir added, however, right, that first of all he says, right, according to Rabbi Meir, right, that Avedis Kohanim Loti Yaldi, right. Correct. In other words, you should not act as a midwife. Okay.
That's a contradiction.
Right, right. Should not act as a midwife to a Jewish woman because they are suspected of committing murder. This is the opinion of every Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Omrim, but the sages say, what? A Vedas Kechavim, in other words, a woman who is an idolatress. Mialeta says, Bas Yisrael, she can help a Jewish woman give birth. She can act as a midwife to a Jewish woman. But under what circumstances? Bizman Shacheros Omnus al Gabah. Right? When there are other women who are standing by over there, in other words, other Jewish women who were there at the time of the birth, then a non Jewish midwife is permitted to do it. But if not, so that's the question. But not simply if just the two women are alone. In other words, the midwife and the Jewish woman is giving birth.
Right.
Rabbi Meir, Eimer Afilach Cheros Omdes Al Gabon Nami Lov. And Rabbi Meir, who insists that the Avedis Kechovim cannot act as a midwife to a Jewish woman, he says, even if there are other women standing by over there, Nami Lov. Likewise, they still can't. Why? Why? Because the Zimnin, there are times, the Mandafale Yoda Apuso, the Katlole, the Lomis Chazay. Because there are times when the woman can put her hand on the soft spot in the head of the child, and she can kill him, and at the same time, the Lomis Chazay, she is not observed. In other words, she can do it without others noticing it. She's skilled enough to do it. And they bring a case where Taket has happened. Kiahi, even as in the case of that